At age 22, I'm a Jamoke Fashala, and I'm growing up in a strict Muslim community in South East London. My next guest was taught to believe that religion should not be questioned. As a teenager, Alam Shahar suffered beatings for failing to go to mosque. And as an adult, he's now written a book about how to live a good life without God. I'm pleased to welcome Alam to the studio. Good morning.
Morning.
I've never started an interview with this before, but what is your relationship with bacon now?
It's one of my absolute favourite foods, obviously.
You can tell I've been reading your book. It is one of your favourite foods, but of course it is considered to be an anathema to many people, many faith traditions, particularly Muslims. So how on earth did you get to eat bacon?
As I describe in the book, I think the act of eating bacon for me was really a thought experiment to see if I could do it. When you're conditioned as a child to believe something is disgusting, whether or not it genuinely is disgusting, you develop a genuine sense of disgust for that thing. And I tell the bacon story because I think it's a really good example of the power of childhood indoctrination. The reason why so many Muslims and some Jews are disgusted by bacon is because as children they were told it was disgusting. And that's the process that is going on with belief in general. Children are told that there is this thing called God, and they're constantly told that they must believe in God, and so this idea takes root. It's not something that they've thought about for themselves. It's not a belief that they come to through rational processes. Children are indoctrinated with this idea and therefore find it very difficult to let go of. So for me, eating bacon was saying to myself, I don't believe in any of this stuff. I can overcome my childhood conditioning.
I'm interested in this notion of childhood conditioning. You were brought up in London, as I said. What was childhood like for you? You went to the mosque?
I went... When I dragged myself there, I often bunked off. It was incredibly boring. And I know that many Muslim children today have the same experience of being forced to attend mosque to apparently learn Arabic. And that's something I describe in my book, which happens in lots of non-Arabic-speaking Muslim communities. The way we're taught to learn Arabic is absolutely bizarre. You're taught to recognise the symbols of the text and to sound out the sounds that the words make, but not the meaning of the words. How ridiculous is that, that we are taught as children to make these noises by looking at text, but not what those mean?
Let us not forget that not only Muslim children, but children from Christian traditions, from Hindu traditions, are taken to the Gurdwara or to the church or to the mosque. It is as much a family tradition for many people as it is a religious tradition. So when you say it was boring, why was it boring?
Because as a child, I felt that my time was being wasted by me.
Even though you were amongst your peers?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of my peers were equally bored. I didn't feel I was getting anything out of it. I felt that it was something my parents were making me do, and just like all children resent the things their parents make them do, I resented it. And it wasn't like going to school. I didn't think I was learning anything. I didn't find it interesting.
Okay. So would you have at any point in your life said to yourself, I am a person of faith, i.e. I am a Muslim, I believe in the Quran, whatever it might be?
I think I must have. As a child, I must have believed it, because I think when you're very young, you do believe the things you're told. However, I think I started to feel uncomfortable about these things from a very young age, long before I went to secondary school. And, as an adult, I just feel that it's disingenuous of me to call myself a Muslim or to say that I'm a person of faith when I don't believe in God. And I think there's an awful lot of people like that out there, that they describe themselves as Muslims or Christians or Jews, because that's how that's the identity.
So culturally.
Yeah, that's the identity that their parents have thrust upon them. And I think it's important to choose your identities for yourself where you can, and also to separate out, people who genuinely believe in God, with whom I have no problem. If people genuinely believe in God, that's fine. But I think an awful lot of people pretend to believe in God or just go along with saying that they believe in God because that's what's expected of them.
I'd be very surprised in this day and age if there were people like that. I mean, certainly because we live in an era of you can be as free as you want to be. You can express yourself as much as you want to express. The idea that someone would say, well, I'll pretend to be Muslim, or I'll pretend to be a Christian, or I'll pretend to be a Hindu, seems...
No, I'm not sure about that. I quote some research in my book carried out by a couple of Cambridge University researchers who interviewed a number of people who self-identify as ex-Muslims, mm-hmm. But who don't call themselves ex-Muslims in public. So mm-hmm. they maintain a life of pretense within their communities, you know, and so it's a problem in the Muslim community that a lot of people who feel that they don't believe in God, that they aren't really Muslims, can't say so openly. So they absolutely carry out a pretense. Mm. And there's also something which the philosopher Daniel Dennett describes as belief in belief. And belief in belief is the idea that, you know, you might not believe in God, but you feel that you ought to. You've been conditioned to think that belief is a good thing, and you feel guilty because you don't believe in God, so you pretend that you do. Mm. So it's a belief in belief, which is a very powerful meme. Mm. And I think Dennett's got it right. I think that because of the way our culture is globally, you know, we live in the 21st century and yet we still think that belief in God is somehow a good thing, a morally superior thing.
I've been fortunate to interview Dennett, A.C. Grayling, who wrote the foreword to your book, and it's quite a glowing foreword to your book, I have to say. And of course, although I haven't interviewed Richard Dawkins, one of the things he does talk about is this whole idea of, well, you know, if you bring your children up in a religion, it potentially, and I'm paraphrasing here, it could be seen as a form of child abuse, which is for many people quite a militant thing to say. You are a man who, of course, is at home with science and you teach and all of that kind of stuff. What are your thoughts about how people bring their children up, given the experiences that you document in the book with regards to religion?
I think it's complicated. I think it's problematic telling people how to bring up their children, right? But I think what we can ensure is that our education system offers all children opportunities to think about these things for themselves, and so that ultimately at some point people make the choice for themselves. I think there is a problem with childhood indoctrination, but I think it's really difficult to untangle the rights of the parents from the rights of the children. So what we have to ensure is that there's lots of stuff out there which children from all backgrounds can be exposed to, which shows them that actually the religion of your parents may not be the most appropriate way for you to go about living your life, that actually there are other ways of living, other ways of looking at the world, which might suit you better. That's really all I'm saying. My book is very different from Dawkins' book, for example, in that I don't think it's a particularly anti-religious book. I think it's a pro-atheism book, because what I believe is that there are millions of people out there who would be much happier if they could just be open about the fact that this idea of God doesn't really suit them, that it's something that they don't believe, and that they want to just embrace atheism. Because I think atheism... And
although you say in the book that it probably should be called the young agnostics.
Yeah, I think technically. I mean, I do discuss why I've called it the Young Atheist's Handbook. I think actually... Atheist is for me is an identity label that I choose to adopt in certain environments to give a clear message about who I am and where I'm coming from. Mm. And agnosticism is a wishy-washy label. It might be a scientifically more precise label, but I think for political purposes, it's a wishy-washy label.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. Alon Shahar is my guest in the studio. The book is The Young Atheist Handbook, Lessons for Living a Good Life Without God. Thank you so much for coming in this morning. Lovely to meet you.